3 tonight with Dr. Henry Nyman, our nightly coronavirus pandemic update. And lots going on here, just a few quick headlines. Debbie has warned 9 American cities and the California Central Valley about their increasing explosions of coronavirus cases. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has tested positive and then took a second test for the coronavirus and says he is now negative. I believe this happened in one day. So maybe a false positive, maybe a false negative. Who knows? Georgia child aged 7 dies of coronavirus as the state's death toll passes 4,000. A new model, not the Imperial College of London variety, projects nearly 300,000 Americans dead by December from coronavirus. We'll get Henry's read on that in just a minute. Dr. Faustus says the U.S. has the worst coronavirus outbreak in the world, which everybody knows if they've been listening to this program, has been the case for a long time. The future, not looking very good. 70% of Americans are now afraid to visit their doctors because of coronavirus. Think about that. Almost 100 people in Ohio infected by one man attending church services. Interesting. Let's see if there's one more here. There's a lot. Here it is. Study finds 98 long-term coronavirus symptoms. One of them is male baldness. I guess maybe female baldness too, which is interesting when you think about how much hair Donald has lost lately. He's really thinning out on top. I mentioned it a couple months ago. It's pretty shocking. Robot uses face-scanning AI to ask people to wear a mask. There's an interesting little rub. There's a lot more. Henry, welcome back. What the heck is going on here? I don't hear Henry. Is Henry there? We may not have him. All right, that means, you know what that means. That means we disconnected, so we'll bring him back up here as soon as we can. But I do urge you to look at that top video of Biden with that little girl. It's just putrid. On that basis alone, he should be long gone. Long gone. But he's not. All right, Henry, welcome back. Crazy times out there.
Okay, sorry. I heard you. I don't know why it wasn't going through, but we're all set now.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying there's, you know, a lot of it's the same. The virus is definitely out there. It's spreading. Trump's telling his lies about it. it's kind of the same refrain here.
Is he telling lies? Excuse me. Is he telling lies, or is he just showing his ignorance, or is it both?
No, I think he's telling lies. I mean, he's, you know, the lies that I was going to go through was the virus will disappear, that 50% of the cases are point of care. 50% of the tests are point of care, which is a rapid test.
Right.
And the children are immune to the virus. So I think he knows that all three of those statements are false. I mean, there may be a little bit of shading with, you know, how he defines immune. And, you know, he's trying to say that they're less likely to die, but he's saying that they're immune. And it wasn't just Twitter. Actually, Facebook also considered it a lie and prevented his re-election campaign from posting any more on Facebook until they pulled it down. So there's a pretty good consensus that when you're going to say children are immune in a pandemic,
you mean children are
rivaling 1918. that people will read that and assume that, oh, there's no problem going back to school. They're immune. Nothing's going to happen to them. What's the problem? They don't need to wear masks. They can go to school. Everything's fine. Children are immune. The president said so. He put it up on Facebook, put it up on Twitter. And, you know, whether you want to call that a lie or whether you want to call that very misleading. I mean, Trump is, you know, his favorite tactic is the big lie. And I was going to go through the ones I just mentioned. And how he says them, and the media even believes it for a while. I mean, he said 50% of the tests were point of care rapid tests. And the media was repeating that, and that's flat out lies. About 0.5% are the rapid tests. Almost everybody gets a nasopharyngeal swab. And he says, it'll disappear. And people say, well, you know, in the 1918 pandemic, it took a couple of years for it to disappear. But it didn't disappear in a couple of years. It basically, the H1N1 virus that caused the 1918 pandemic didn't go away until 1957. It slowed, people developed immunity to it, and it had to moderate and change a little bit, but it was still H1N1. H1N1 went away in 57 when it was replaced by H2N2. It just came up with a virus with two different serotypes, and that virus could escape the immune response of the human host more effectively, and H1N1 kind of ran out of steam. There was too much immunity, and it faded away, but it was replaced. The flu didn't go away. It was just a different serotype. Serotypes are just basically humans assigning an influenza A virus based upon how it reacts with, experimental animals that basically set up, define what the serotypes are. It was still influenza A, and it was a virus that was quite a bit different than H1N1. So it had a new serotype, but it was still influenza, and it was a pandemic. And that stuck around till 1968, when that was replaced by another serotype. The H2 got replaced by H3. It was still influenza A. It was another pandemic.
H3N2.
And H3N2 is still around. I mean, it's not as lethal as it was in 1968 when it was brand new and people didn't have any immunity to H3. They developed immunity. And a seasonal is still more deadly than H1N1 because seniors weren't exposed to H3N2 when they were young. The only thing that was around was H1N1. But the point is that he makes these statements, and they're just flat out false.
Here's the statement of the day.
People assume there's some truth to it. And try to explain it away and say, well, you know, it took 2 years to go away. It didn't go away in 2 years. It was a pandemic. Pandemics don't disappear in a year or two. There might be enough immunity, so it's not as deadly, but it doesn't go away. I mean, there's 20 million cases of COVID already. The U.S. has got a quarter of it. There's been 5 million cases in the U.S., and most of those cases have appeared in the last 3 months or so. And we haven't really gotten to the fall when most are predicting that the numbers are going to go up dramatically, somewhat in line with what happens with influenza. There'll be a little bit of a seasonal component, and the virus will take off in the fall, and it'll be complicated by flu, and the hospitals won't be able to handle the supply.
Flu season in 6 weeks.
Right. And the latest projection from Washington Washington State, the one that Trump likes, says they tend to project a lower number. They're talking about 300,000 deaths in the U.S. by December 1st, or just under 300. I think it's 292,000 or so. So just under 300,000 deaths by December 1st. I mean, that's not even the end of the year. That's still this year.
Right.
And it's by December 1st, the full effects of the fall wave will likely not be felt yet in the death count. You might have hospitals overflowing by December 1st, but
we could have 400,000 dead by the end of the year.
December 1st is not going to be, a dramatic change in the fatality rate. I mean, even if there's a vaccine, the vaccine's going to take a month to get into effect, especially if it takes two doses.
Yeah. Or three, as Fauci said.
Well, I don't think it'll take three.
Or Gates, rather.
But
here's the quote of the day, Henry, from Donald Trump. Nobody can do what I've done.
Right. I mean, that's what he said in the run-up to the election in 2016. Only I can do it, But
nobody could do what I've done, as he continues to praise his White House virus response.
Right, right. He thinks he's doing great, and that's another big lie. I mean, Fauci says the U.S. is doing worse than anybody. They got more cases. They got more deaths. They got more. They've got the longest run for the first wave. Most of the world is worried about the second wave, and they've kind of got their numbers down. Uh-huh. The U.S. has got the first wave with more cases now than they had when it started. Just to give you an idea what the numbers are looking like. I mean, today we're getting close to 60,000. There were 57,000 cases. California's lagging, and they may come in with another series. We may get up to 60,000 by the time the day is over. And we're up to 1,300 deaths. So we're very close to the 1,400 that happened last week, and this is per day. It's not a grand total. It's just today. We're 1,333, and it's likely that California is going to tack on some more. So it'll probably be up to 1,400. And these numbers are bouncy. I said that the testing is down. A lot of people are discouraged that it takes so long to get a result back. They figure, it doesn't really pay. By the time they find out whether they're positive or not, their quarantine period's over. So why spend the time in line to get tested if you aren't going to get the results for 10 or 12 days? And so you're kind of stuck with, should you quarantine or not? You don't know if you're positive or not because you're waiting for the results to come back. And in spite of the numbers being low, Texas reported 306 deaths today. So that's what I was saying. The numbers are a little bit bouncy. Yesterday it was 236. Today it was 306. The numbers are still low in Florida on the deaths. But that's, again, they basically pulled down all the testing centers for the hurricane, and they shut things down, and they probably aren't tallying the numbers, or they aren't getting test results back, and they don't know why the person died in some cases. But anyway, they had 120 deaths today. California's got 147 as of 6:45 or so local time. That's liable to go up. But California has admitted that there's a problem with their tallying the numbers. They're actually counting them by hand now. because their computers are screwed up and they can't get the numbers from the local counties to their database. So they're having trouble just recording the numbers. And their biggest problem is in LA County, where they have the highest frequency. So their percent positive has dropped from about 7.5-8% down to about 6%. But that's not because the situation's improving. It's because the county that has the highest rate of positives is they're only getting partial. If they're getting anything out of that county, they're getting them, you know, they're counting them by hand, so they're lagging mm-hmm. behind, and they're representing a smaller percentage of the total. But in spite of those limitations, the numbers were again 57,000, over 57,000 today. And just to give an idea of what kind of breath this is, this isn't just the top three states or three or four states, and it's not just the states in the South. Here's the numbers on the ones that have at least 1,000 cases today. California's got 8,504. Illinois has got 1,953. Florida's got 7,650. Louisiana's got 1,303. Texas has got 7,598. Georgia has 3,182. Ohio's got 1,166. Indiana has got 1,040. Tennessee has got 2,252. North Carolina's got 1,979. Missouri's got 1,179. Arizona's got 1,444. Alabama's got 1,938. And Nevada's got 1,325. So those are just the ones above 1,000. There's an equal number that have between 500 and 1,000. So these numbers are not down in the, oh, they got 50 cases, they got 100 cases. These states are reporting 500 or more cases. And that's how there's almost 60,000 cases just today. So these numbers are going up. And the total for the Worldometer basically hit the 5 million mark. So mm-hmm. the U.S. around 2 o'clock this afternoon had 5 million cases. And they had already hit the 160,000. They're already up to 162,800 as far as the deaths are concerned. Few of the other ones are lagging a little bit.
No one could do what I have done. Just remember that.
Right, right. And just to give you an idea, the numbers around the world, you know, the northern, North and South America are starting to dominate now. I mean, the mm-hmm. U.S. is number one with 5 million cases. Brazil is now up to 2.9 million. India is up to 2 million. Russia is 870,000. South Africa is 538,000. Mexico is now up to 462,000. Peru is up to 455,000. Chile is up to 366,000, and Colombia is up to 357,000. So for the top nine countries, it's not in Asia anymore. It's not in Europe anymore. Six of the nine are in either North or South America. And there's only one in Asia, which is India. Russia kind of goes between Europe and Russia. So Russia's the only one in the top nine that has anything in any part of it in Europe. And then there's South Africa, which is in Africa. So each of those continents have one country, and North and South America have nine. So the virus is certainly in the area, but it's certainly in the U.S. The U.S. really has more cases than any other country. And yet, and as Trump says, nobody can do what he does. But, I mean, his statements are still, you know, I think they're in the lie category. I don't think they're in the misleading, or he doesn't really understand. He says the children are immune. And, you know, he might be saying, well, he doesn't really mean immune. He's saying that most of the children that get it don't die, and they do better with it. But he says they're immune, and he puts that out over the air. He puts that out on his Twitter feed. His re-election committee puts that out on Facebook, and he's getting pushback. I mean, Twitter put up a warning and pulled it down. Facebook made them pull it down and said they couldn't post anything on Facebook until they did. And the children aren't immune. The children do better. They get infected.
Well, what do you have on schools right now? Let's jump into schools. Schools are opening. What are you hearing? Do you have any data that I don't have? I don't see a lot yet.
Well, it's trickling in. The one I mentioned yesterday was actually in Georgia. It was in Cherokee County. It's the Etowa High School, and that's the one where they took a picture of the seniors that were, you know, basically their faces were literally inches apart. They weren't 6 feet. They were literally inches apart. Zero were wearing masks.
Come on, that's kids. Everybody knows kids are going to do that. This is no surprise to any of our listeners. What we're going to have to wait and see, though, is the communicability of it.
Well, here's the part of that story. It wasn't just kids. I mean, they were all seniors in high school. But they were at
Oh, you're talking about secondary schools. Okay. I thought you were talking elementary. Go ahead.
No, this is a high school. This is Etowa High School. These were all seniors.
Were those Nyman boots on the ground at work today? Were you out there looking with your binoculars?
I actually sent you the
picture. Be careful, you'll get arrested.
The picture's out there. You didn't need boots on the ground. All you need was an internet connection. But the point is that these are in Georgia, okay? Today, Georgia reported 3,182 cases and 42 deaths. If you look at the excess deaths, Georgia has had excess deaths, which is not based on any diagnosis. That's just based on a death certificate.
Right.
How many weeks in a row do you think Georgia has excess deaths? They put out the numbers weekly. There's about a 2 week lag because it takes a while for the death certificates to be recorded and get into their database. So the data goes through about 2 weeks ago. Out of those, how many weeks do you think Georgia has excess deaths starting 2 weeks ago and going backwards in time? Well, the answer is 20.
Gotcha.
They have had excess deaths in 20 weeks in a row. The last 20 weeks in Georgia have all been excess deaths. And the numbers were relatively high. Then they started to go down when they had the lockdown. And now they're starting to go up when they took off the lockdown. And there's no stopping it because they've started school. And the kicker is this school where they had all these seniors, there were probably 50, 100 of them in the picture. They were all together. They were all looking at the camera. They were all leaning in, so they were literally cheek to cheek.
I'm looking at the picture right now. I got it. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And that school is masks optional. These guys have 3,000 cases today. Mm-hmm. And if you go to school, it's up to you whether you want to wear a mask. And, well, they're not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask. How many masks do you see in that picture?
So, I honestly didn't see any, but I'm sure there must be some.
No. Well, they may be in their pockets, but there were no masks on their faces.
No.
Right. And they're actually giving out masks. They say, oh, everybody gets a mask. Well, yeah. They put it in their pocket or in their purse or in the trash. They're not on their faces. And so that's the type of school. You're going, the virus is everywhere. They didn't get the virus down to a reasonable level. The virus is always, for the past 20 weeks, they've had excess deaths. So they've had plenty of virus. It didn't just show up. And now they're all going back to school. And they're going back to school with a, well, you know, I don't know. I can't see the virus. You know, here's a mask. You know, if you want to put that on, put that on. You know, it's up to you.
Uh-huh.
And they don't put it on.
No.
And they're going... And they pose for a picture, and you know that's not the only time they're in that type of density. They showed pictures of the hall, the halls, you know, the entire population was shoulder to shoulder.
Oh, the building is just crawling. It's full. It's wall to wall virus inside. Got to be
right.
So,
right. So it's a matter of the matter of how much testing. There's a couple elementary schools. They went and they cited them that, you know, the first day of class they had positives and they got you know, X number are in quarantine, but they're just getting started. The kids are going to school. They're probably doing some fever testing. Frankly, I don't know. I mean, if it's mass optional, I don't know if they're even doing fever testing. They're just going and saying, let's see what happens. You know?
They're just going to look for symptoms, and if somebody's symptomatic, they may send them home. They may not even test them.
Right. if they go to, now what they did with the flu was, you know, if you're not feeling well, you can go to the nurse's office, and the nurse will look at your symptoms, and if you got a temperature above 100.4, they would send you home. Now, I'm not even sure they're going to do that, because a nurse is going to get infected. You know, they do testing in parking lots with testers with hazmat suits on and pushing the swab out in a container on a cart, and they don't get within 10 feet of you, and you're in your car and you do the testing. So I'm not sure how you say, you got COVID, come on down to the nurse's office. Let's see what you got. And, you know, the doctors don't tell you to come into the doctor's office to get tested. The doctors tell you don't go to the emergency department to get tested. The doctors say, call up, describe your symptoms, and if you need to be tested, they'll tell you what parking lot to go to, and you stay in your car. If you go to the doctor's office, they go and say, you need a mask on. You got to come in through this entrance. You got to go out through that exit. And you wait to be called in your car.
Right.
You dial in with your cell phone. You wait in the parking lot. And when it's your turn to be seen by the doctor, you come in and your time is minimal. So I'm not sure how many of these kids that aren't wearing masks, that they say are masks are optional, are going to even be diagnosed. They're just going to say, I don't know what I got. You know, yeah. It's a little crud going around, and I don't really feel that sick.
That's
and,
right.
You know, it's probably allergies or it's...
Well, they'll be able to keep the football season going that way.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said yesterday. I mean, these guys are dependent upon the football season. So, yeah, not so much high, well, to a degree with high school, but more so in colleges. And Colorado State, they were actually telling them players not to get tested because they already had 14 on the team that had been diagnosed. And so they were running out of players.
Right.
They didn't want the new ones to get tested. And then there were even reports that they were changing the test data. The ones that were positive, they were changing the results of the test to hide the fact that they had been tested and they were positive. And if you've got 14 players on a football team, that everybody's been exposed, that they've all been a contact of a confirmed case. They're all supposed to be in quarantine. They're not supposed to be playing football.
Well,
practicing
we both
football
know that's not going
to
happen.
Get ready.
Right.
Well, what's going to happen is just going to spread like wildfire because it's going to go there. They're going to ignore it. They're not going to get
they
tested.
Test, though,
they're
going to
be delayed.
Only if they test. It may spread, but only if they test will we formally find out.
It will spread, and they will have symptoms, and it'll be obvious. Or they're coughing. I'll say, what do you got? I don't know. I haven't been tested. I think I'm okay. You know, it's not going to work.
Play right through it. Yes, I'm expecting to start a quarterback Friday night. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, the teachers are going to go into class and say, all these kids are coughing. Nobody's being tested. This is crazy. It doesn't make any sense. These kids are going to go home. They're going to affect the rest of their families. Some of them have multi-generations at home. And it is way too obvious. I mean, they may not test enough, so they may not know about the ones that are asymptomatic, or they might not know about the ones that have milder conditions, but there'll be plenty of kids that are coughing and have fevers and end up going in the hospital, and then it'll be all over the newspapers that they had this kid, and this kid's in intensive care, and, this teacher is on a ventilator.
Well, we're going to lose teachers.
Hear about this teacher that died. Yeah. Right. And they're going to hear about that. And then everybody in the school is going to know who that teacher is. And they're going to hear this teacher died. This teacher's in the hospital. And the other teachers aren't going to go and say, well, let's see what happens next week. They're going to say, this is crazy. We're not going to do this. This is a war zone. You're not testing the students enough. You have no idea how many are positive, and you want us to go into this and teach when we did, online teaching last spring. And there's no reason to have this, in-class teaching. It's just crazy. And it's not just one or two. They're doing this in Arizona. I mean, that was another lie. Trump was saying how great Arizona is. That was his press briefing yesterday. And like I said, I think these press briefings are going to go by the wayside because everybody knows he's lying. He's going and saying how great Arizona's doing, that the numbers are improving. Well, the numbers were so bad that relative to what they were 2 or 3 weeks ago when they were shipping the patients to other states because all their hospitals were full, they might have an improvement, and it might be a percentage, and it might be comparing weekends to weekdays and say, oh, look how much lower it was on Sunday. So there is cherry-picked data. It doesn't have much to do with anything. And Texas is still reporting something like 17% of the tests are positive. It's still raging in Texas. The numbers, you know, like I mentioned, the numbers that are reported dead are bouncing all over the place. It's 300 today, 200 yesterday, and 100 and something the day before, and then 275 3 days earlier. So the numbers are real bouncy. It has to do with how they're reporting them. And the idea that Arizona is a model of how to do the pandemic, when in fact they had the highest percent positive, I think, in the nation. They were up in the 20s. They were in the same ballpark that New York was when they had their outbreak. And that is who Trump talked about yesterday. He was talking about how great Arizona was because, you know, the governor's handling it well. I mean, do you remember that the governor had it locked out, and Trump went out there to the Honeywell plant. He said, oh, you should open things up, and he obeyed. He immediately opened things up. The numbers went through the roof. That's why they had so many cases, because they basically took off the lockdown when the virus was raging. And that's what he's doing, using as a model. He said, oh, I gave him $18 billion. So he's picking his states, because, you know, Arizona, he can't lose Arizona. He's going to lose the election without Arizona. So even though people are dying at record levels, and they're having rates, positivity rates at record levels, he's saying they did great. You know, I gave them $18 billion, and look how well they're doing. And, you know, that's the last briefing he had. But he does the same thing. This 50% point of care testing, there's nothing like 50% are being tested by point of care. Most of the people that are getting tested are getting tested by going into the parking lot and getting a nasopharyngeal swab. And so many are getting tested that they have the backlog. And so the numbers are starting to go down because of the backlog, not because, they're going down because they're being tested too fast because they have all these machines at point of care. They're not going to the point of care. The point of care is a very small percentage. And then his other big lie is that the virus is going to disappear. I mean, there's nobody is saying the virus is going to disappear. There's no scientists that are saying they'll disappear. He had economists there that were going, the virus is going to be gone in 2 weeks. He was saying it was going to be gone in April. He said as soon as it gets a little bit warm, it's going to disappear. When he's got record numbers in Arizona with the temperature well above 100 degrees and approaching 120 degrees.
Okay, let's...
He's opened up the schools without real preparation. They don't really have enough tests. The schools are open. They're going to have...
Well, that was the plan, wasn't it? They knew they were going to have not enough tests. Yeah.
Right. And to give you an example of his preparations, I mean, you know, yesterday... He was doing the Yosemites for Yosemites, in part because his difficulty reading, and in part because he probably never read his speech before it was in front of him. But he did the same thing.
He does
today.
Act like he didn't rehearse. He does. That's
he
true.
He definitely hasn't rehearsed, because today he had to say something about Thailand. So he called it Thailand. Thailand, right. It starts with a T-H.
That's from Jeffrey Epstein's influence, I think.
Right. Yeah, that's from his inability to read and his lack of any preparation. So what he's reading for the first time. And he goes and says, Thailand. Oh, that doesn't sound right. He corrected it. He said Thailand, then he changed to Thailand. But... You know,
he didn't rehearse.
He doesn't like reading. He got four student deferments and bone spurs. He was around for the Vietnam War. He was draftable during the Vietnam War. Right next to Vietnam is Thailand. I mean, most people You know, if they were in college, you know, he's going to Penn, you know, he's in an Ivy League school, you know, he may not have taken the SATs. He might have gotten somebody to do that for him, but he should have known how to read. And Thailand was certainly
he doesn't rehearse
during
that's
the
obvious,
Vietnam
you're
War.
Right.
And he sees Thailand and starts with the TH, so he calls it Thailand.
Uh-huh.
So the point is, there's no preparation. There's no plan. When he does these briefings, he goes, he cherry picks data. He says, oh, look at Arizona. The numbers are down, da, 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 da. And anybody that looks at Arizona says, that's one of the worst places in the country. I mean, that was the big problem is he opened it up. They opened it up on command. You know, it's open sesame. He says, open it up. And, yeah. And the governor, within 24 hours, we're open for business. And we're out of ICU beds 4 weeks later. So it just goes on and on. So the schools are just getting started. So the reports that are going to be coming out of the schools will start picking up speed in the next couple of weeks. And you're going to have these schools where the virus is spreading like wildfire. The kids are doing, you know, masks optional. They're not wearing mm-hmm. any masks. Mm-hmm. They're going in there and then the virus is spreading. But like you said, they're probably not testing. The kids aren't getting tested. And what's going to happen is it's going to get to this, you know, epidemic level. So locally, they're going to have everybody in school infected. And then pretty soon it'll be bad enough that the kids will get tested because too many of them have a high fever and have obvious symptoms, and they'll get tested, and then the reports look like, well, so-and-so is positive and so-and-so is positive. Uh-huh. And then the absentee rates will start to go up, and then the teachers will get infected, and the teachers are going to get tested because they know that they'll know that the virus is all over the place because everybody's coughing. B, they'll you know, they'll be the adult in the room. They'll know that, you know, if they've got a cough and everybody's coughing, they probably have the virus. And if they have the virus, they shouldn't be going to school and they shouldn't be teaching their class and exposing everybody in the class to the virus that they have. So they'll get tested. And then they'll see that, you know, we've got a 20% absentee rate with the mm-hmm. teachers as well as the students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when they get that number of teachers infected, they can't have classes because they don't have teachers to teach. The teachers are in quarantine if they're not already in the hospital. The
or
students are...
They may be having memorial services before the semester is over.
Right. Well,
hate to say it, but it's true.
They definitely will. I mean, there's going to be at-risk teachers that are teaching
sure.
and are going to get exposed to this. And
how many people at the age of 50 have comorbidities? I'll bet it's at least half, at least.
Yeah, especially in the United States. There's plenty
That's
of
right.
obesity. There's plenty
That's
of
right.
diabetes. There's plenty of heart disease. All of those things are risk factors. Or underlying
yep.
conditions.
Yep.
And yeah, they go and say, well, you know, only the ones with underlying conditions are the ones that are in the ICU. Well, you know, just as you said, obesity is an underlying condition. If you're heavy enough, so the percentage of adults that are 50, that are in their 50s or 60s, a high percentage of them have one of those underlying conditions. And so it's not, you know, a big shock to say, well, you need underlying conditions. Well, as you said, that's half the population. It might even be more than half the population. So the schools are going to be a disaster. So when they're talking about 300,000 dead by by December 1st, that's getting close to doubling the number of dead already. That's another 140,000 deaths. And that's probably an underestimate because things are going to accelerate when you get into October or November. That's going to be more the flu season. It's going to be real hard to diagnose because the symptoms aren't that different between flu and COVID. The testing is still probably going to be a disaster. That they might try to do the quicker test, but the quicker tests have a fairly high false negative rate. So people are going to get that test and say, well, I don't know what I got. I tested negative for COVID. I tested negative for influenza. I seem to have this cough. And I don't know if I need a quarantine or not. Maybe I just have some, you know, upper respiratory tract infection, which is, you know, something that you get in the fall.
You know, high school
winter
football players, these kids are going to try and play through it, whatever they have, if they can. That's just what kids do. They'll ignore the fever as much as they can.
It depends how sick they are. I mean, during the swine flu, there was an initial wave that was relatively mild, and the kids, not just the football players, but most of the kids, you know, went to school because they were sick, but they weren't that sick. They knew
that's
they had
what
something.
Kids do. Right.
Everybody was coughing. But then when it hit again in October, November, then the numbers started to go up. I mean, I said I had a kid in high school. It was a media contact and did all the statistics and I had a bunch of kids that did this. So I kind of know what to expect. And kids normally, varsity soccer would not miss a game. You know,
same
thing for the football. And there were kids missing. So there was.
What was a nasty one?
Three, four of the kids were out, you know, each day. It wasn't always the same ones. There was one player that was sick for just about the entire season. But most of the others, they were out. They were out for a game or two, and then they were back. But it was rotating, so there were always players out. And I would be on the side where the teams were, so I could hear both benches, and they were all coughing. You know, they were coughing a lot. And so a lot of them were playing through it, but they didn't necessarily last because once they got this 102, 103 temperatures and they were fatigued and they knew they were sick and they were coughing and they basically ended up missing some games. And that's very unusual because I do this for many, many years, and you never see kids missing for a varsity game. You know, they're all there. And for the swine flu, there were absentees. And it'll be the same thing for this. The kids may not die. They may not go to the hospital. They may not go to the ICU, but they can get pretty fatigued and pretty sick, and no, they shouldn't be at the hospital. I mean, at school, because it's contagious and it can be serious. And you know, even if it isn't serious for other students, it's serious for the teachers, and they may not be thinking about that when they're feeling fine, but when they start developing the symptoms, then they'll realize that, you know, going to school is probably not a good idea. But the schools are going to seed the infection, and the numbers are going to skyrocket, once you get going into September or so. And these schools aren't going to stay open. They're not going to complete the fall season. They're starting late. They're starting like 2 or 3 weeks late. I think they're already setting up for abbreviated seasons.
Some are going to switch till spring.
You're right. And they're not going to get through the abbreviated season. And a lot of the colleges, as you said, are just moving all the fall sports to the spring and hope that things have cleared out by then and they'll squeeze them in. You know, I think they're staggering them and they're shorter seasons, so they aren't all playing at the same time. And, you know, so some will start in early spring and then mid-spring and move them around a little bit. But the fall sports are not going to be anything like normal, and I doubt that many of them are going to be able to complete the season, because it's going to go in a wave. You're going to hear, this school, basically called off, postponed the season, and this school postponed the season, and this school switched to everything online, everything virtual.
Right.
And it'll just go bang, 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 bang. So by October, the schools here will be essentially empty. You might have a few pockets, but overall, nobody's going to be going to school.
Not a lot of Christmas decorations at school this year. Okay, I get it. All right, Henry. Thank you for the update, and we'll keep watching.
We'll wrap it up tomorrow.
An avalanche of information it is every day. Talk soon. You take care. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Back with you all tomorrow night. Talk soon.